Or I have to question, is having three martinis too much? Well, if you ask the question, that means it's probably too much.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the second episode of Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with me, John Rabin. And here we are. It is 4th of July, although you're probably listening to this not on the 4th of July. But if you are, please be considerate of your furry friends when setting off your fireworks. And by furry friends, I mean me. Be considerate of me when you're setting off your explosives, because great, good for you. I don't hate fireworks, but I've shot guns and I've taken psychedelics, so fireworks are neat. And if you're sober, they're kind of they're kind of jarring, and you're like, nah, great. I'm not 12, but yay, they are pretty, I suppose. But anyway, be considerate of me. We're going to start off like 12-step meetings, to start off with the Serenity Prayer, AA meetings. I have the what I call the Solidarity Prayer, and I thought I would start doing every podcast like starting off a meeting, just more of a bitch session than a meeting, but let's do the Solidarity Prayer before we get really going. God, grant me the serenity to accept that you made me with an addictive personality while being surrounded by people who are normal. Wow, that sucks. In fact, why am I talking to you? You've done enough. I guess I'm on my own. Amen. Well, that's going to be divisive. All right. Let's get started. I wash dishes during the day. I have a daytime job of dishwashing, but the dish pit is in its own room, so I can listen to music. I listen to music 9 hours a day, 4 days a week, so it's almost 40 hours. I listen to music, and that sounds really great for a while. But after about a month of working there, I completely burn out of everything that I like. And you start like branching out, and it's because getting bored of your music got me into different types of music that I was like, I don't give a shit about jazz, but now I really like jazz, and I don't understand how people can listen to like Charles Mingus and Miles Davis and then go, no, you know what? Smooth jazz is where it's at. I'd really like to hear something boring and I want to hear somebody dick around on a saxophone with no soul. Can we do that? I don't get it. But I listen to types of... I either listen to music that I want to actually kind of listen to and explore, like albums, or I'll listen to music that I just want in the background as kind of white noise. When I do my meditation, the way I meditate is I basically, get in my own head while I'm working, and I just kind of zone out, which is why people sometimes at work think I'm in a bad mood, because they want to talk to me, but I'm so far in my own thoughts with like daydreaming and just over analyzing society and whatever else. And they'll be like, hey, John. I'm like, what? Can't you see I'm doing something here? I'm drifting off and staring into nothing. This is very important. But so I have this, I have different types of music that I just listen to in the background. So I have, sometimes it's jazz, sometimes it's classical. But I also like 90s electronic, late 90s, mid 90s, kind of like Underworld and Left Field kind of stuff. But I also have recently gotten into, in the past couple of months, dub. I love dub music and reggae. And it's really strange to some of my coworkers. They're like, you're sober. Like I'm like, yeah, do you like dub? Because not when I'm not smoking weed. That's really strange. And I never really thought of that, which kind of made me think of how shitty do you think straight edge reggae is? There's got to be like Christian reggae or something. How that's got to be terrible. That like a live straight edge, you know, everybody hold on, stop the song. I smell that. Is that a doobie? Yeah. So I guess I'm saying I listen to a lot of drug music now that I'm not doing drugs. Although isn't all music kind of drug music that's not played in an elevator? I've recently gotten into like 48 Hours and Dateline type shows because, well, my girlfriend likes them. I don't know why women love these shows, but I don't know. I guess a lot of people do now because I'm totally into them and just the overproduction of it. And it's just really, I mean, it's murder, you know, murder shows. And so I guess it should be dramatic, but it's just kind of silly, some of it. And I've noticed there's a lot of shots. So they have to do a lot of narration. So they have a lot of shots of somebody walking down a beach or in a field or down the street of their small town. They're just walking around and while somebody's narrating over them. So that means that they have to do a lot of those, a lot of footage to edit down to use for these shows. And that's just weird to me to have like a serious interview with a member of a victim's family and then have, okay, that was great. Now, I'm going to need you to walk down this beach and I want you to look off into the distance and think about your dead cousin and go. All right, make sure that you're really dwelling on the idea that her husband might get away with it. And action, cut. Look, we don't need you to cry. We already got the crying shot. This is more introspection. And take it again. It's just, it's just weird. Yeah. I love those shows, though. I don't know. And it was funny because because she was into that. So I was like, oh, well, I love this show, Autopsy, on HBO. Maybe you'll be into that if you're into murder. And she's like, no, that's too real. It is, and it's dark. It's really just, all right, let's look at corpses for a while. You see where it's kind of gross. So, speaking of death, so this has actually been a kind of a rough week for me. Not that rough, but an emotional one, because I had two friends pass away this past week, and it's interesting how we all deal with death just in general, I think. And I think it's ridiculous that I'm trying to talk about death in the second episode of this stupid podcast. Let's tackle death, John. Let's do it. I don't know. It's I don't have a fear of death anymore. And if you want to know how you can really tackle your fear of death, I recommend dying a few times. Overdosing is I don't recommend it, but it's because of it. I don't. I'm fine with my own. It's, you know, it's other people's that, you know, when you deal with loss of some, you know, that even if you haven't seen them in a while, it's just, I mean, it's just emotional. It's just kind of draining and sad. But yeah, that's the thing, is that because I OD'd several times. I had to be revived a few times, and it really is nothing. Like, you really don't realize going into it that may have been your last moment. Like, and the only thing you know is that it's really a pain in the ass to come back when they, this is kind of dark, but it's true. It's like you come back and you're like, oh, Jesus, this is painful. Like, because whatever they have to do to you to revive you and wake you up is not pleasant. And you're just like, oh. And you're almost mad and you're almost like frustrated and angry at the paramedics or anybody else. You're like sitting there going, are you, you know, I was sleeping, you know, what the fuck? And it's a really weird place to be. But after going to treatment and stuff and thinking back on it, it's really just like, well, that's really, when you go, you go. It's like, well, that was it. You know, so on a personal level, I don't fear. It's not so much fear of dying. It's more of just kind of like a bummer thinking about like, wow, I didn't get to do that. I didn't get to finish that. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine a long time ago and about suicide, and they constantly struggled with depression and suicidal thoughts. And I had my point of view, and I still believe this, but like my perspective on it was about suicide was that if you die, then you don't get to, then there's nothing, you know, because of my own experiences of ODing, I was like, you don't even get to experience relief. There's just nothing. But the point of view was, if every moment or most of your moments are living hell, nothing is a more appealing view to hell. And I had not really thought of that. So I get it. And I think that I think everything has to do with empathy, just in general. So you're gonna have to have empathy with people from different points of view. And so I don't know with someone's passing, you have sometimes, especially when they've been in a lot of pain, they for whatever reason. So you have sadness, and then you also have a little bit of relief. And I thoroughly think you shouldn't ever feel guilty about how you feel. Feelings are not wrong, and they're not bad. Actions and how you express those feelings, that's the key, and that's why you got to have awareness and, you know, what you're doing. But the empathy part, I try to empathize with the way people react. To a point, people react different ways to death. Sometimes they're kind of shitty. I remember when Robin Williams died, there was a whole lot of different types of posting, and you know, there were people that were co-opting his death immediately, and people do that. That's one of the reactions, is to co-opt someone's death into a cause that they. That means something to them personally, like depression. That's usually the one people co-opt immediately. And depression is serious, but don't, you know, can you give it a minute when you don't immediately fit someone's life and death into your narrative? Like, it's, you know, find a different way. But, you know, that's at least better than, I saw some asshole had commented on a friend's page about how they basically thought Robin Williams was a coward, like, because suicide is cowardly, apparently, which doesn't make any sense, because that takes a whole lot of guts to fucking do. Actually, you know, the most cowardly thing to do is to comment the thought in your head. It actually takes more work to not say something. Have you ever tried not commenting on somebody's stupid Facebook update or some random opinion that pops up on your newsfeed? It hurt. It's like painful. You think not drinking is hard? Not commenting on an idiot is impossible. Holy shit, where you're just like, oh, god damn it, I want to say something bad. And you like close the browser. You no, I'm not going to. And you sit there, and it's a painful 5 minutes of just like, oh, god damn it. Oh, I gotta, you know, and you just kind of think, oh, it's not gonna, they're not, you're, nothing that you can say is gonna make them go, oh man, I'm totally wrong. It just doesn't happen. So you just kind of grit your teeth and it passes. So, yeah. So keep that in mind if you're fighting the urge to do drugs, that it's, at least you're not, you know, not commenting. But that's what I believe. I believe that not commenting is way, it's way, it takes way more courage to not blurt the thought in your head online than to just empty out. That's probably the most cowardly thing you can do, is to not consider anybody's thoughts and just go blah blah blah, this is what I think. And you know what, if I knew, if I remembered who called Robin Williams a coward, I would totally out him out here. But it was some shitty open micer, like I've completely forgot his name. It's not like I'm with, you know, I wouldn't say, I would totally say his name on my fucking podcast, but I don't know his name. I don't even think he does comedy anymore. He was terrible, by the way. And not that that matters, not that your opinion should be void because you're bad at comedy, but also he was bad at comedy. Oh man, you know, the other thing is when a celebrity dies and people use it for attention, there's a fine line, you know, and like I said, don't, you got to just let them, I think that you got to let them do whatever, but it's just weird. It's one thing when it's like an Anthony Bourdain or somebody that really had an impact on a lot of people. But it's another thing when they're just going, oh my God, David Ogden Stiers died. He, you know, Cogsworth from Beauty and the Beast. Oh, it's so sad. Yeah, he was also on MASH. I never watched MASH, but oh man, I am literally crying right now. I'm not metaphorically crying. I am literally crying. Yeah, there's a, you know, I'm just, don't like, you know, don't give him a heart. Don't give him any kind of likes. That's just, it's weird. But like I said, you gotta kinda, that's the hard thing, is you gotta let people, that's how they process, I guess. You gotta let them do whatever they're doing. It's just weird. But yeah, man, it's the one thing, since, you know, this is a sobriety podcast-ish, I've had people, whenever somebody close to me passes or something, I've had people just, you know, they check with me, whatever. And I think a lot of people think that that the death of somebody is, you know, puts a person in recovery at risk for saying fuck it, you know, and relapsing. But actually unless it's somebody really, really, really close, like a parent or a spouse or something, a sibling, I don't think it's actually something real, a really traumatic event is actually, we're more in recovery, we're more prepared for those. We're actually immediately like on guard against desires to go out and have a drink or get a shot or get a hit. Like, we're actually more prepared. It's more, that's, so not that you shouldn't be concerned, but it's usually okay when you're dealing with the with somebody's passing. We're actually, for the most part, it's that's fine. It's usually more the little things, and it's relapse tends to happen with a chain of events of like small little things. Like in the past 5 years, it's actually been all right for me. I've never come close to like, this is it, you know, I'm gonna, you know, fuck it, kind of a deal. But the closest I came, it wasn't a bad day at work, but it was one of those days at work that's like, man, it'd be really nice to have a shot and a beer right now after that hard day. And then, you know, missing a bus shortly after that, so having to wait for the next bus, so that's another 25 minutes. You know, it's It's hot. Now I got to go back to my stupid, fucking sober house where I'm staying. Because this was, I was staying at a sober house at the time. I didn't have, and just all that. So it was a combination of things that made you just kind of go, And of course, the defense on that, always keep in mind, is that the saying that they use is to play the tape out. That's the recovery saying, which basically means you're thinking about all the good times and all the good things about getting wasted or drinking, i.e. the first couple hours you're at the bar, not the last 2 hours. So you play the tape out, which is kind of an outdated phrasing. I wonder if they're going to update that for the new generation instead of play the tape out. It's just you gotta finish watching the video. You finish binging the TV, finish binging the show. Yeah, don't just not the first couple. You gotta binge watch the rest of it. That's going to be the new say. So yeah, it's, I don't know. It's that. That's really it. For those of you who are not sober, that's really the thing. It's not so much the desire to drink. It's not so much the desire to do drugs. It's being, once you're sober, then you're with your thoughts all the time. And you just want to break from thinking and from feeling. And I think a lot of people, especially in this day and age with our addiction to social media and not connecting, it's really appealing to not feel. It's like, I like not feeling. This is great. Numbness is cool. So I get that. So anyway, death is all around us. All right. That wasn't bad. That was all right, right? That wasn't too heavy. Maybe it was. I don't know. Let people be. Yeah. Well, I'm going to, by the way, if you have questions, if you have comments, you can email me at stillsoberpod@gmail.com. I wanted to cover a question. By the way, this was not sent to me because my podcast is young. And I know that that I touch dozens of lives. So I stole this question from my friend's Facebook page because he did it as a meme. And also, he's not trying to be sober. He was just kind of curious. But his Blake in New York City writes, what's fun to do when you're sober? And I think he was just curious. He's like, I don't know. And so I wanted to answer that. What's fun to do when you're sober? What do sober people do? Board games. No, they don't. They do that. And turns out I actually like board games. I thought, like, that was like for the longest time when I was first getting sober, I was like, fuck, man, I do not want to hang out with sober people. We're going to, play Scattergories and sit around and drink sparkling soda. And that sounded like shit to me. And turns out board games with somebody that you're dating is really awesome. But that's, I think it took a while. I think it took several years, and it took me aging dramatically with my current love of jazz. Boy, I'm not aging fast enough. I got to start listening to fucking jazz. Apparently so. I don't, kids today with your rock and roll is just too loud. But I would say my recommendation, by the way, when it comes to what do I do now that I'm sober? What do I just do shit? Like, it's really, I think the biggest problem with a lot of people is, and it takes a while, once you get used to it, but the idea, when you think about being, you know, not drink, obsessing about not drinking is the same about, is the same as obsessing it about drinking. It's this, you know, it's it, they both sound unhealthy. So it's not so much you think about what can I do that doesn't involve getting fucked up. Well, just do stuff. Like, don't, you know, just, I don't know, like, Nicole, our mutual friend Nicole had commented on there, just like reading books and being away from other people, which is absolutely my favorite response, because I don't want to recommend that to people, but to other, you know, individuals who are trying to be sober because they might want to be social. I personally don't like other people sometimes. So it's being away from other people is great. Holy shit. It's not to out myself, but a lot of times when I'm like, yeah, I got to get out of here, guys, you know, and you know, it's like an excuse. They're like, oh, you know, he's probably, you know, he's dealing with the, you know, the recovery, and he's, maybe he's fighting an urge to drink. No, I just don't want to be, you people are annoying. And in a way, yeah, I'm fighting the urge to drink because I'm going to have to drink to continue to be around you annoying sons of bitches. So I'm going to go. I'm going to go home and play Fallout. Yeah, Blake, I play a lot of Fallout sober. That's always fun. I don't know. There's plenty, you know, especially here in Austin, Texas, there's a lot to do. And you don't have to drink. I do comedy. I don't have to. The rise of Topo Chico and alternatives and Squirt, which is an unfortunate drink, but title, but it's definitely yummy. There's lots of alternatives in bars now, by the way. So it's nice that I can order ginger ale or whatever the hell else. So there's lots to do. Boy, that just kind of trailed off. I did not sell that well at all, did I? No, there's plenty to do. There's hiking, although I don't like the outdoors much. There's swimming, but that's also outdoors. There's the library. There's TV. Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't sell that well at all. That's fine. Guys, I think that's about, I think this is about it. That's about good for episode 2, I think. I made it nice and heavy-handed, but it was something I needed to talk about, and I'm glad that you guys stuck around, those of you that are listening to this. I'll be back next week. You guys have a good week. Stay sober if you want to be. Send me anything at stillsoberpod@gmail.com. Tell your sober friends who don't want to listen to either super over-the-top optimistic bullshit or super sad bullshit. Tell them, hey, there's this middle-of-the-road oddball guy who kind of sort of talks about recovery but mainly just kind of complains, but he makes fun of stuff and sometimes it's funny. Yeah, just let him know about that. Yes, I'm still sober. And I've got I'll be headlining the Velveeta Room later this month on the 20th and the 21st. I'm going to be recording my album on those shows. Also, I'm going to be recording another show on my birthday on October 22nd, and that's a Monday, at Kick Butt Coffee, and I'll let you know more about that later. But anyway, that's it for me. I will see you guys next week. I love some of you. All right, bye.
A little smoke, a whole lot of loving. That's all I need. Make it through the night. cold beer, cold shoulder. Just one glass of whiskey, that's all it takes. Push me over the line, set 'em up, I'll knock 'em down.